Morning. Today's daf in Becharos is Lamed Gimel. We start today at the Mishnah Lamed Beis Lamed Beis. Who to invite for dinner? The Mishnah starts off the discussion regarding a Bechor and who does the Kohen invite when he eats the Bechor. Again, Bechor, there are the most basic variable when it comes to the Bechor is whether it has a blemish or does not have a blemish. A Bechor Ba'amum is still given to the Kohen, still property to the Kohen. Part of the Matnas Kahuna, Parshas Korach, the Torah enumerates all the Matnas Kahuna. And included in one of the Matnas Kahuna, of course, is the Bechor. So it's given over to the Kohen as many of the Matnas Kahuna. Now, if it is not a Baal Mum, so then it's offered as a carbon, as we've discussed time and again. But if it is, in fact, a Baal Mum, so the Kohen gets to eat in the privacy of his own home. And in doing so, when eating in the privacy of his own home, so he's going to be eating the Bechor. His family's going to be eating the Bechor. Is it going to be a little bit like Truma? We know when it comes to Truma, so the Kohen and only the Kohanim can eat it. Any non-Kohen, any Zar that eats Truma is subject to serious penalties in doing so. Financial penalties, spiritual penalties in doing so. Bechor is like that. Bechor is also going to be of the genre. Or no. But in other words, it's Matnas Kahuna. It's a gift to the Kohen, but the Kohen at that point in time can do whatever he would like with it, and he can have anyone come over and eat it. And so this is going to be the discussion, the debate in our Mishnah, and let's start with the Mishnah inside. The Mishnah starts off, B'Shamer Amam Lo Yimne Yisrael Ima Kohen Lebechor. So B'Shamer's position is that Yisrael cannot join together with the Kohen in the consumption of the Bechor. Right, we have in our Mishnah Lebechor, the other Gersnayus is Al HaBechor. But certainly the idea, according to Beit Shammai, is that the Kohanim and only the Kohanim can eat it. Now, how far do you want to go with Beit Shammai? Meaning, is it like Truma, like I just suggested a moment ago, that if a non-Kohen were to eat the Bechor Baal Mum, he's going to be subject to Misa B'dei Shammayim, just like a Zar Shachal Truma? I don't know if Beit Shammai would go that far. It doesn't say. The Gemara doesn't say. At best, I'm speculating. So, but, okay. Anyway, but that's the, and we're going to see drushes in the Gemara. That get us to this point. Okay, but anyway, that's the position of Beit Shammai. Beis Hillel Matirim Vafilo Vekochav. Now Beis Hillel is on the other side of this, and he says that you can have a non-Kohen being invited at the table, eating the Bechor with the Kohen, the Bechor Ba'amum with the Kohen, and not only can you have Yisrael, but according to our Mishnah, according to Beis Hillel, Afilo Vekochav, you can even have a non-Jew coming over, meaning it has no Kedusha whatsoever, it's a Bechor Ba'amum, and it is now devoid of any kind of kedusha, and as a result, you can have anybody coming over and eating it together with the Kohen. It's property of the Kohen, but after that, after calling it property of the Kohen, but it has no kedusha, it's sans kedusha, and so therefore, anyone can come over and eat it. So this is the range of positions that we have in our Mishnah. The Gemara points out that there actually is a little bit more in the range. We really mapped out the extremities. Meaning, according to Beit Shammai, nobody can eat it other than Kohanim. And according to Beis Hillel, everybody can eat it, even including a guy. Is there a middle position? The answer is yes. And we're going to see it right now. Masisa Mani Rebbe Akiva Hi. Our Mishnah follows the viewpoint of Rebbe Akiva. Meaning, our Mishnah's viewpoint of Beis Hillel is really reflective of Rebbe Akiva's understanding of Beis Hillel. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and now we're actually going to introduce a third position, a middle position. The Tanya of the Gemara quotes the Brisa Bechor Einim Nemalav Ela Chabur Shekula Kohanim Divrei Beis Shammai. In this Brisa, we first introduced the opinion of Beis Shammai, like we saw in our Mishnah, that only the Kohanim can eat the Bechor Baal Mum. Beis Hillel Omrim Afilu Zarim. Now Beis Hillel says you can even have non-Kohanim, but in this position of Beis Hillel, so meaning it stops right there, non-Kohanim. You still have to be a Jew, you still have to be Yisrael, but non-Kohanim can eat it. And then Rabbi Kiva Mati Afilu Avikochavim. And then Rabbi Kiva's matu even afilu ovekochavim. Now, had I not known any better, meaning had we not had the Gemara's opening, so I would have said Rabbi Kiva's the third shita. He is the third shita. But what we can now just clarify a little bit is that this is Rabbi Kiva's understanding of Beis Hillel. Meaning within shita's Beis Hillel, Rabbi Kiva's of the position that's afilu ovekochavim. He had a different mesorah. There are actually two mesorahs in terms of what Beis Hillel holds. One Mishnah is what the Tanakhama of the Braisa says, that it's Afilu Zarim, but it has to be a Jew. And then Rabbi Kiva's Mishnah of Beis Hillel is that it could be everybody and anybody, including Ovei Kochavim. Okay, Adkan. So we have now in front of us three positions in terms of who can eat the Bechor Baal Mum. Now, my time of the Beit Shammai. So here we start off with the Gemara with a discussion of where's all this coming from? What are their sources? So the Pasuk says, as far as Beit Shammai is concerned, Vitzar Mielach. Now, over here, to appreciate the drasha, so you got to see the Pasuk inside. We're in Parshas Korach. Perek Yerches, Pasuk is Zion. Pasuk starts off, Ach Bechor Shor, O Bechor Kesef, O Bechor Eiz, Lo Sifdeh. So you are not allowed to redeem it. Remember, we spent some time yesterday with that pasuk of Lo Sifdeh. Kodeshem, Ez Damam Tizrok Al Mizbech, Ves Chabam Taktiri Shel Reach Nichoch LaHashem. So you have to sprinkle the blood on the Mizbech, meaning it's a carbon. Next pasuk, Ubisarem Yelach. And now as far as the meat is concerned, it's going to be yours. It's speaking obviously to the Kohanim. Kechazea Tenufa Ucheshok Hayamim Lechayiyah. So it's going to be like the parts of a shlamim. So just like the parts of the shlamim belong to you, Kohanim, so too, when it comes to these parts, meaning the meats of Bechor, they're also going to belong to you. Now, Beit Shammai says, great. So what do you see in the Parshan Korach? Actually, you see it pretty clearly. You see a clear equation between the parts of the shlamim that go to the Kohanim and the parts of the, and the meats of the Bechor that also go to the Kohanim. And so now with this equation, we'll call it a Hekesh. So my time at the Beit Shammai, Dichsiv, Vifsarmi Allah. Ma hasam Josek over there meaning Chazev Vishok. Kohanim in Yisrael lo. Only Kohanim kini Chazev Vishok. Right? As far as the Kohanim and only the Kohanim's ability to eat Chazev Vishok. So the Gemara doesn't quote a pasuk, but Rashi does in the bottom of the Amud. Atau v'nechu v'nosecha itach. So the Torah says clearly that the only consumers of Chazev Vishok are only Kohanim. So just like that's true by Chazev Vishok, so too it's going to be true by Bechor. Af hacha Kohanim in Yisrael lo. Good. That's the Shita Beit Shammai. What would Beis Hillel say in defense of his own position? Actually, very simple. As we turn out to the top of Lam Gimel and Aleph. So Beis Hillel says, you're right. The Torah does equate the two. But what is the Torah equating? The Torah is equating Bechor Tam with Chazev Vishok. If the Bechor is a non-blemished animal and it's being offered as a carbon, so then en achinami. The only consumers of the carbon Bechor are going to be the Kohanim and his family. But and Zarim cannot eat it, just like Chazev Vishok. You're right about that. In fact, by the way, when you read the Pesukim again, you'll see it's pretty clear that the Bechor being described over there in those Pesukim in Parshas Korach is actually only talking about the Tam, not the Baal Mum. But as far as the Baal Mum is concerned, of Baal Mum, Ksiv, HaTamar, HaTamei, HaTaor, Yachtav, Yochlenu. So as far as the Bechor Baal Mum is concerned, it's like Psule HaMukdashim. Psule HaMukdashim is in Parshas Re'eh. And it's not super clear it's talking about Psule HaMukdashim, but if you look, if you go through the Psukim over there and you go through the Rashis over there, you see that the Psule HaMukdashim is being described over there. And the Torah over there, HaTameh V'Ator Yachzav Yochlenu, the Torah says that once you get to Psule HaMukdashim, and the Bechor Baal Mum is Psule HaMukdashim. Meaning it once upon a time was a carbon, but then it developed a blemish, and so now it's going to be, well, normally Psule HaMukdashim is going to be redeemed. We know a Bechor Baal Mum is not going to be redeemed, but still, the idea is that a Bechor Baal Mum now is Psule HaMukdashim. And the Torah says it's going to be eaten like, just like HaTameh V'Ator Yachdav. It's going to be eaten together, both somebody who's Tameh and somebody's Tahor. So, Uma Tameh She'eno Ocha B'Kachim Kalim Ocha B'Bechor. So the Gemara says, now let's think this through. So the Torah has just given a license for somebody who's tummy to eat Bechor Baal Mum. That's what we're learning in Parshas Re'eh. If a tummy person can eat Bechor Baal Mum, you don't think a non-Kohen could? A non-Kohen's ability to eat is much better than that of a tummy. So once a tummy person's allowed to eat Bechor Baal Mum, of course a Zar is allowed to eat Baal Mum. And the Gemara makes, and Beis Hillel makes exactly this point. HaTameh V'Ator Yachzav Yochlenu Ma'atameh She'eno Ochel B'Kashim Kalem Ochel B'Bechor Zar she'ocha b'kachim kalim eino din she'ocha b'bechor. Right? Who can eat kachim kalim? So not a tameh, but a zar can. So you see that the zar's ability to eat is stronger than that of a tameh. Once the Torah gives license for a tameh to eat b'chor b'amom, so then obviously a zar can do that as well. Now ikal amifrach ma l'tameh shekin huter mechalo ba'avod atzibor. So the Gemara now points out, okay, you're right, that's true. But if I'm going to compare a tummy to a czar, tummy can be viewed as something stronger than that of a czar. Consider, says the Gemara. Let's say you have the majority of the Jewish people who are tummy. So now what can a tummy person do? He could do the avoda, right? Tuma hutra b'tzibor, or tuma dechuya b'tzibor. But we know that a tummy person under certain circumstances can do the avoda. Can a zar on any circumstance do the avoda? Of course, the answer is no. So even though you're arguing to me that the zar's ability to eat is stronger than that of the tummy, well, I'll just counter and say, well, the tummy person can do avoda at certain times, and a zar can never do the avoda. As far as Beis Hillel is concerned, Beis Hillel is not moved by that argument, by that counter argument, and the Gemara explains why. Okay, but those are two different topics. We're talking about now consumption. You're talking about avoda. I agree. In terms of avoda, you're right. A tummy is stronger than a zar. A tummy under certain circumstances can do the avoda. A zar under no circumstances can do the avoda. That point is very well taken. But we're not talking about avoda right now. We're talking about achila. We're talking about the consumption of psula amukdashim. Okay? And once the Torah gives license for the tummy to eat psula amukdashim, so I've proven to you that a zar's ability to eat is far surpasses that of the tummy. A tummy cannot eat shlamim. A zar can eat shlamim. So now once the Torah allows for a tummy to eat psula amukdashim and the b'chor b'amom, so certainly a zar can do so as well. Fine. So this is now the opinion of Beis Hillel. But when we say the opinion of Beis Hillel, we mean the middle position of Beis Hillel. The middle position of Beis Hillel, that who can eat Bechor Ba'mom, Kohanim, and Yisraelim. Now, but there's a third sheet, and that, of course, is Rabbi Akiva. In Rabbi Akiva's viewpoint of Beis Hillel, anybody can eat the Bechor Ba'mom, even a non-Jew. Rabbi Akiva amate afilo ovdei kochavim, aitam de Rabbi Akiva, kitzvi v'chayal. Go back to Parshas Re'eh. Go back to the Parsha of Psula HaMukdashim, and the Torah over there illustrates that, you know what it's like when you have Psula HaMukdashim? It's just like Tzvi V'ayal. It's like these wild animals. These wild animals, which of course are permissible to be eaten. And the Torah is saying that these Psula HaMukdashim are going to be like Tzvi V'ayal. And here we have a Hekesh. Ma Tzvi V'ayal Mutalov Dikochavim, Apsule HaMukdashim Mutalov Dikochavim. And so just like Tzvi V'ayal, who can eat Tzvi V'ayal? Anybody. They're animals. Right? It happens to also be that they're kosher. So, but of course, anybody can eat them. So just like anyone has a license and allowance to eat Tzvi V'ayal, so too, same thing was true with Psula HaMukdashim. It basically, by the way, I know the Gemara doesn't frame it exactly this manner, but you know a little bit about what is happening in the Gemara over here? Psula HaMukdashim. Once upon a time it was a carbon. Now it's developed a blemish. So it's no longer a carbon. Certain circumstances, most of the time it has to be redeemed. Sometimes it does not like the Bechor. Fine. But really, what is kind of behind the Gemara over here? When you have Psula HaMukdashim, we've said numerous times, it has residual Kedusha, right? It has vestiges of Kedusha. Basically, what's underneath all this is, how much vestiges does it have? Meaning, according to Beis Shammai, like you could just pare it down. According to Beis Shammai, it has still a significant amount of vestiges of Kedusha. Only Kohanim can eat it. According to one version of Beis Hillel, the middle position, if you will, it still has remnants of Kedusha. It can only be consumed by Yisraelim. Can't be eaten by a non-Jew. And according to the Rabbi Akiva version, mamish, nothing. Now, when I say nothing, by the way, keep in mind, even according to Rabbi Akiva, of course, you're not allowed to do Giza, you're not allowed to do Avoda. In other words, it's still the regulations haven't changed. By Psula HaMukdashim, just in terms of its Kedusha and how much Kedusha is remaining, so Rabbi Akiva basically is arguing that nothing. In other words, there's kemat no Kedusha that's remaining. In other words, how far are we going to go? Right. In other words, Psula HaMukdashim for a Kelev. Right?
It's a Yekuver. You can't give it to you, the dog.
Agreed. Right.
We cannot.
Cannot.
So in general, I tell you, you're not supposed to eat with the going, right? You're not supposed to just giving the food to eat is okay.
According to Rabbi Akiva, that's fine.
It's fine to give.
Yeah, you can sell to him. By truma, if according to Rabbi Akiva, the
tummy person owns a maidservant, and she's allowed to have.
Right, Kenyan Kaspo.
So does Rabbi Shama agree with that for?
I assume so. That's a fair question. I'm not sure.
They're
considered semi-Jewish, no? Yeah, I mean, Kinyan Kaspo is the correct way to look at it. Okay, V'idach. Now, what do we have right now? So we have seemingly a really strong argument on behalf of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Kiva says, who can eat the Bechor Balmom? So Rabbi Kiva says, anybody. You can have a Goy, Yisrael, Goy. Right? All the way down to a Goy. Anybody can eat the Bechor Balmom. And, seemingly making a phenomenal argument. The Torah says that Psula Mekdashim is Kitzvi V'Chayel. Okay, so if it's Tzvi V'Chayel, so then you can have a Goy eat it. And so a Goy can eat Tzvi V'Chayel. It's a really good argument. It's a strong argument. What's the counter to that argument? Now, if you're on the other side of this, meaning we could say like Beis Shammai, but the truth, the Gemara is probably defending the middle viewpoint of Beis Hillel. So we could say like this: if you open up to Parshas Re, you're going to see that the Torah compares it to Tzvi Vayal on three separate occasions, twice in Perek Yud Beis and the third time in Perek Tes Vav. And you have to look at the Pesukim themselves contextually. It's not all the same. Not every time is it talking about Psula and Magdashim, but still, the point of the Gemara is that we see this comparison to Tzvi Vayal on three occasions. Chad lechad Rav Yitzchak v'Rabbi Yoshia. One time is there to teach us the halachas of Rav Yitzchak and Rav Yoshia. What are the halachas of Rav Yitzchak and Rav Yoshia? That's such a wonderful question. In fact, if you look at Rashi over here, it's a really unusual bit of Gemara. And Rashi writes over here, as far as Rav Yitzchak and Rav Yoshia is concerned, Rashi says, V'lonus parish lanu hechan. I don't know what the Gemara is talking about. Now, Rashi is very open about the fact that when he doesn't know pshat in the Gemara, he'll say so. I mean, he's not going to write. Rashi is obviously the parish ha-Gemara, and also just extraordinarily honest, and he's not only interested in arriving at the truth. And when Rashi doesn't know, he'll say, I don't know. And Rashi says, I don't know. The Gemara says, we have a drasha, and I don't know what the drasha is. Tosfos over here makes a suggestion. Tosfos says it's as per the Gemara in Makos. If you take a look at Tosfos inside, Tosfos is the second Tosfos on this Amud. So, Perish Bekunshos, Lois Parish, Rabbeinu Chananu Mefarish. Now, there are other Mefarishim that Tosfos had to work with, not many others, but he did have a Rabbeinu Chananu. And Tosfos says, the Rabbeinu Chananu offers the Peshat based on the Gemara in Makos. The Gemara in Makos says, and I'm reading Tosfos inside, Hamavir Shura Psula Amagdashim, Vahamanik Shura Psula Amagdashim Loke. So, if I either do any one of the Kalayim prohibition when it comes to animals, now, there are a couple of Kalayim prohibitions when it comes to animals. There's breeding. You're not allowed to take two different animals and breed them together. And there's also working. I'm not allowed to take these two different animals and work them together. What if I do it with Psulei HaMukdashim? If I take a Psulei HaMukdashim and I either take this animal, breed it, or take the animal and work it. So one is going to be in violation of Kalayim. Now, that's strange. Why Kalayim? So they're two animals. Right there, it's one animal, but it's really one animal, which are two animals. So, shor psula magdashim amanik shor psula magdashim loke guf echad hein the asana kasur shnei gufin. So, even though it's one animal, but the Torah treats it basically like two animals, one animal which is really two, which in of itself is a fascinating idea. Perish ashur b'fnei atzma nechshav kitzvi v'chayal dahinu shnei minim. Meaning, what the Torah is driving at is that even though it's one shor, but it's like tzvi v'ayal, it's like two different animals. So velokim sugar, okay, fine, and that's the drasha of Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yoshia, that the psula and mukdashim are going to be like two different animals, and therefore if one were to breed it or work it, one would be in violation of kalayim. Okay, that's Tosfos based on Rabbeinu Chananu. Back to our Gemara, so that's one drasha, meaning we have only three to work with. So one drasha is tzvi v'ayah. Second drasha v'chad lichad Rabbi Lazar Kafar. And the second drasha goes like Rabbi Lazar Kafar. Now here, although the Gemara doesn't speak it out, Rashi says, open up to the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says, how do I know that a chayah requires shechita? So over here, we learn it from the second reference to Tzvi V'ayal, meaning just like Psula Magdashim, which is a behema, of course the behema requires shechita, so do chayahs as well. Chayahs requires shechita. V'idach, and now we're up to our third reference, Matzvi V'ayal Peturim and Bechorah, Psula Magdashim, Peturim and Bechorah. A point that we went over earlier in Amasechta is that Tzvi V'ayal is going to be exempt from the din of Bechor because they're chayos. And so too are Psula and Mukdashim going to be putter from the din of Bechor because of the comparison. Basically, what just happened? We ran out of room, right? We ran out of road. Meaning, so these are the three drushas that we're learning out from Tzvi V'ayal, and that's it. Meaning, we have no more drushas. So even though, what was the drusha that Rabbi Kiva wanted to make? That just like a guy can eat Tzvi V'ayal, so too a guy can eat Psula Mukdashim. Okay, it's a nice drasha. There's no more room for it. Meaning we ran out of drushas. So we ran out of drushas. So there's no opportunity to make the drasha. Tana Rabbana, we are now about a third of the way down on Lamagimel Amud Aleph. Bechor ein machinah sod lenidos. A woman is a nidah. She can she eat a bechor ba'al mum. And once again, we're going to see that this is the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And again, by the way, again, the Gemara doesn't speak it out like as strongly as this, but like it goes to the core question of how much kedusha is left in the tank of our bechor ba'al mum. So according to Beis Shammai, you cannot give it to a woman who's a nidah. She's a tameya. Beis Hillel omer machinah sod lenidos, and Beis Hillel says you're allowed to give it to a nidah. Now, what is behind this machlokas? So the Gemara goes on to explain. My time at the Beis Shammai dechtiv uvisarim yalach mahasam nidos lo af hacha nidos lo. So we know that when it comes to chazei v'shok, again, it's the same point that we made earlier this morning. When it comes to chazei v'shok, so we know as it relates to a as it relates to who can eat chazei v'shok, it's shlamim, it's a karbon. You can't even step foot into the Beis Hamikdash when you're in a state of tumah. So over here, clearly, a nida would not be allowed to eat chazei v'shok. And So, and what is Beis Hillel's counter argument? We know it already. We already saw it this morning. We're just going to say it again. Beis Hillel says, yes, the Pasuk in Karach compares the Bechor to Chazav Ashok. You're right about that. But what kind of Bechor? A Bechor Tam. So the Bechor Tam is compared to the Chazav Ashok. But we're not talking about a Bechor Tam. We're talking about the Bechor Baal Mum. And the Bechor Baal Mum, therefore, is going to be, it's like Chulin. And Anita's allowed to eat it. So Beis Shammai's counter-argument is as follows. Okay, you want to tell me that a Tami person can eat Psule HaMukdashim? Okay, I'm ready to entertain that argument. But there are different types of Tumah. And we could put Tumas in different categories. And over here, what kind of tumah is a nida? That's a tumah hayotza migufa. That's the kind of tumah that where the tumah is generated because of a discharge that comes out of her body. What falls under the category of tumah hayotza migufa? Izav, izava, anida, ayoledes. So those are tumah hayotza migufa. Those are more severe tumas. Avahecha de tumah hayotza alav migufa lo de ashkarachan de palagrachmana bein tumah hayotza alav migufa lebein she'ein tumah hayotza alav migufa. And he says, and look, I know that when it comes to achilas karbanos and achilas kachim, the Torah is just more severe, more strict when it comes to tumah yotza migufo. How do I know that? We'll quote the Mishnah Pesachim. HaPesach Sheba B'tumah. So let's say you have a carbon Pesach that's brought in tumah, right? Yesterday was Pesach Sheni. Right? I would have been some more excited if this Gemara was yesterday, but okay. But yesterday was Pesach Sheni. Yesterday was the second opportunity. But we, of course, all know that if the majority of the Jewish people are tumah, what kind of tumah? Tumas mace. So if the majority of the people of the Jewish people are Tameh, so that year Pesach is brought B'tumah. So that's true, but there's Tumah and then there's Tumah. Meaning, who's allowed to eat Pesach above B'tumah? Only somebody who's Tameh Meis. Let's say you have a Zav Zav and Nida, you'll let us come over and say, hey, we'd like to participate in Pesach Rishon this year. You guys are Tameh, we're Tameh. So let's eat Karm Pesach. So the Mishnah says, no, there's Tameh and then there's Tameh. So a Pesach Shabbat B'tumah lo yochlu mimenu zavim mitzarim v'zavis v'nidos v'yoldos. So a Pesach that's brought in a state of tumah, in a condition of tumah. So now it's interesting. In our version of the Mishnah, we have included in that is a mitzora. So a mitzora is the tumah yotze migufo. Kind of. It's not because of a discharge. Meaning the mitzora. The tumah is generated because of something that emerges on their skin, but right, I'm not sure if it really falls under the category of tumah yotza migufa. Anyway, you'll see over here the sheet of mekubetzes takes it out. He takes out the mitzora, right? It's not in the classic list of tumah yotza migufa. So if we took it out, so then the Mishnah reads exactly how we would expect it to read. Lo yochlu mimenu zavim zavos nidos v'yoldos. Good. So these are people who are tumah yotza migufa and they're not allowed to eat karban Pesach. What have we just learned together? That tumah yotza migufa is qualitatively a different type of tumah. Even though the Jewish people are eating Pesach this year in a state of tumah, but people who are experiencing tumah yotza migufa, so they're not eating karban Pesach. So Beit Shammai says, so if I'm going to say the same thing over here. So when it comes to the psula hamukdashim, you want to entertain a discussion that people who are tumah can eat the Psule HaMukdashim and the Bechor Baal Mum, all right, but not to Mayotze Megufo. We just saw by Karm Pesach the distinction. Beis Hillel, now what's Beis Hillel going to say in defense? Very simple. You're comparing Karm Pesach to our discussion. Don't compare the two. Hasam hudegal rechman atam nefesh. When it comes to Karban Pesach, the reason that such a distinction exists between Tumas mace versus Tumah Yosem Gufo is because the Torah makes a distinction. But that's specific to Karban Pesach. But over here, the Torah says that a tamei and a tar person can eat it together. And the Torah makes no distinction between what kind of tamei person we're talking about. So by psula and mukdashim, there really is no reason to make any kind of distinction between tuma and tuma. A tamei person is allowed to eat psula and mukdashim, period, according to Beis Hillel. And so that means to say, a tamei person is tamei mace, tamei person is who's an ida, doesn't matter. Okay. Tana Rabbana. Gemara now is going to continue its discussion of psula and mukdashim and what kind of limitations does it have. And we're talking now about margilin. Margilin, what is the process of margilin? It is flaying the animal, but in a very specific manner. Okay, and now keep in mind, by the way, as I speak with confidence over here, this is how much experience I have with the flaying of an animal. I've seen it once, okay, live and in person. But that's it. Now, there's a kind of flaying which is called margilin. Now, as the name indicates, it's done by the feet, right? Rego. What they would do is they would make an incision around the foot, and then they would peel the hide off in one fell swoop. So that basically what you're going to get is you're going to get the hide in the shape of the animal. Now, the hide in the shape of the animal, it's really good. And basically what you have now is cylindrical hide. You have cylindrical hide. All you got to do is got to stitch up the arms and the legs and the opening of the neck. And what you basically have now is instant thermos. Or any container. You have a container. So this idea of margilin, of flaying the animal, but flaying it from the legs and basically peeling it down so that it flays off cylindrically. So now it's in general very functional. Question on the table is as follows: when doing this kind of flaying, are you allowed to do it to? Are you allowed to do the sanyantif? Are you allowed to do this for your bechor balmum? These are the discussions we're having now in our gemara. Tana Rabbanan, the gemara says, "Hey, margilin be yom tov." You're not allowed to do this on Yanta for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. And you can't do this type of flaying when it comes to the Bechor and Psula HaMukdashim. And the Gemara goes step by step in the Braisa. Let's start off with the first point of the Braisa. As far as flaying the Anyantav, I understand why you're not allowed to flay in this manner. Because this is a lot of extra work. Yantav, even though there's heter ochel nefesh, but at the same time, however, the Chachamim wanted to minimize the amount of extra labor there is involved. Right? It's an uvda dechol. It's tircha yaseira. It's just simply, it's not bechavad hayantav that we're going to be doing this extraneous type of activities. So fine. So I understand why you're not allowed to do on yantav. Ela bechor man, mantana. But the bechor, why not? Why can't we flay it in this manner? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chisda Beis Shammai Hi Damar Machin L'Asol L'Nidos. So Rav Chisda makes a really interesting comparison. This is the Shita of Beis Shammai, who we learned just moments earlier this morning. Says that you cannot give your Bechor Ba'amum over to a Nida. Similarly, you cannot flay the animal in this manner. Now, how did that work? Just because you're not allowed to give it to a Nida, therefore you're not allowed to flay the animal in this manner? How do those two points connect? So he turns to Rashi. Rashi writes over here, Beishamehi, Disavre Bechor Ba'amum, I'm reading the Rashi. Disavre Bechor Ba'amum, Bekdusha Sokai, Afilo Achashchita, Kitam. Now, by the way, what I suggested earlier, Rashi says it beferish over here. That with the way Beishamehi views the Bechor Ba'amum is that it has vestiges of its Kedusha. It's still in the state of Kedusha, which of course explains, according to Beis Hillel, why it is Anida cannot eat the Bechor Ba'amum, because of its vestiges of Kedusha. It's still carbon light or carbon like. So afila achashchita kitam v'chiheche de tam in margilim mishum b'zayin de kachim de pogem habasar de misyare lachtoch haor v'chotech habasar bevamon nami en margilim. So now Rashi says, now that we are looking at the bechor b'amon basically like a tam, so a simple question: can I do this type of flaying if it had been a regular bechor, a bechor tam that was brought as a carbon? So Rashi says, of course not. Now Rashi says, now why not? So Rashi says, first Rashi says, b'zayin kachim. It's a degradation to a karban. And Rashi over here explains, and I'm rereading the part of the Rashi that's really critical. the pogem habasar, because what you're going to be doing is you're basically going to be losing meat. In order to flay in this manner, because you really care so much about the way the hide comes off the animal, so that means to say that even though there's going to you're going to be losing some meat, but because the flaying in this particular manner is so significant, all right, so I'm going to lose a little bit of meat. And if the animal was totally your animal, that's your decision to make. That's fine. But if the animal is a carbon, that's not your decision to make. The meat is the most important part of the carbon. The meat of the animal that's going to be eaten by the owners, that is the critical part. And no meat is to be lost. And so therefore, if it were a carbon, you of course would not be allowed to do this. That's Rashi's point. You're going to end up cutting off some meat together with the hide, and you're going to be losing some meat, and you can't do that with a carbon. And Beis Shammai says, well, if I can't do that with a carbon, I also can't do it with a Bechor Baal Mum, which is basically carbon-like. Fine. Be'bamum nami and margilin. Fine. That now, so it's such a beautiful Rashi. So that is the comparison between the Beis Shammai Shita of you can't give the Bechor Baal Mum to Anida with our current position of ein margilin beyantav. Comes out a little bit strange then. It comes out now that this Tom Bryce is going like Beis Shammai, but fine. That's Rav Chisda's point. Velo b'psul ha-mukdashim. And also, you cannot do this kind of flaying as it relates to general psul ha-mukdashim. Antana amar Rav Chisda, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimoni. So over here, we're no longer talking about the Bechor Baal Mum. We're just talking about regular psul ha-mukdashim that you actually redeemed. And still, in this Brisa, you cannot do this special kind of flaying. Margilin. Why not? So Rav Chisda again comes to explain, and he says, well, it's going like the position Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, a new Tana. Not new, but in our discussion. Did not, so over here, we quote from a, now it sounds like a Mishnah, but probably a Brisa. Let's say you have two animals in front of you. One animal is a, and there are two chatos. And one is perfect and eligible to be brought as a carbon. The other one's a baal mum. Now, why do you have two? Meaning you only need one. So Rashi over here writes, and this is pretty much what I imagined Rashi was going to say. And that is that the second one is an insurance policy. You're a nervous person. And you have a chait on your writing over you, a carbon chatas chait. And now you want to bring a carbon chatas, but you bring one. So what happens if something happened to that one? I lost it. So you offer a second one as an insurance policy. Okay. So, under those circumstances, you have the tamima and the balas mum. Tamima tikrav, balas mum tipada. So here's what you can do. You can offer the tamima and the baal mum can be redeemed. Now, I know that normally, what do we say? Chatas, shinis chapru ba'acheres, that if I have a carbon chatas, where I lost it, I replaced it. So what do we do with the lost one that we subsequently find? It is to be disposed of. It's chatas amesa, as we're going to be discussing extensively in the upcoming Masechtas. But over here, however, it's not chatas shinis chapru ba'ala ba'acheres, because I bought it originally as an insurance policy. And now that it's a blemished animal, tipada, it can be redeemed. Nishkata balas mum, im achelo nizrak damashel tamima, muteris. If, let's say, we shechted the baal mum, im ad shelo nizrak damashel tamima, provided that we have not yet sprinkled the blood of the tamima, so then it would be fine, it would be muter. Im shenizrak damashel tamima, asura. If, let's say, after you sprinkle the blood of the tamima, you're left now with the remaining animal, even though it's a bechor baal mum, even though it's a chatas baal mum, so it's according to the Tanakhama, at this point in time, it's going to be asur. Why? Because at this point in time now it falls under the category of chatas shinis kapru ba'acheres. Now, Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, Amar, afilo basa b'kedera, v'nizrak damashol tamima asura. Now, according to Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, it goes even more than that. The point is even further highlighted and accentuated. You had your two chatos. Again, one you got as an insurance policy, but then it got developed a blemish. And what I did is I redeemed my blemished animal. I shechted my redeemed blemished animal. It's sitting there in the pot. And now what happens to its counter chatos, the tamim chatos? It's being offered now in the Beis HaMikdash. This now meat that's sitting in my home, that's already been redeemed, that's already been shechted, that's sitting in my kitchen, so this animal now becomes aser. Why? Because chatash nis chapru ba'acheres. So you see that according to Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, this idea of yapsule hamukdashim, it still is retaining its original status after redemption, even after you shechted it. it still retains its original identity of being an ex-carbon. So, fine. So that means to say now that the Shita of Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon brings us to the idea that when you have Psulei Mekdashim, it basically retains its original identity as being a carbon. Good. Now, just as a point of interest, the Gemara now has explained that you cannot do Margilin neither to our Bechor Baal Mom, and you can't do it to Psulei Mekdashim. And when Rav Chista explains it, so for the Bechor Baal Mom, he says, oh, that's going like Beit Shammai of our discussion. When he discussed the Psulei Mekdashim, he says, oh, that's going like Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. Now, it's interesting. Can't Rav Chista just use Beit Shammai to explain everything? Or conversely, couldn't Rav Chista use Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon to explain everything? Meaning, they're basically the same idea. Is there any difference between the Bechor Baal Mom versus regular Psulei Hamukdashim? That's the Gemara's next point. V'Rav Chista, look, Makula ke Beit Shammai 1, and Rav Chista just simply say the entire price is going like Beit Shammai. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Doma adkan lo kamer Beit Shammai lo bechor dikdusha so meirechem. I might have made the following argument. Psulei Hamukdashim of Bechor is different than your regular Psulei Hamukdashim. Why? Because Psulei Hamukdashim of Bechor, consider, it was born a carbon. So it was born a carbon, so it gets a blemish, okay, and you're allowed to eat it, and you don't have to bring it as a carbon. But there I can make the argument that it, according to Beit Shammai, has vestiges of Kedusha, but consider the fact that it was born as a carbon. Regular carbonos are not born carbonos. You are makdish them. Okay, so it's different. Fine. So that's why the Beit Shammai Shita is not necessarily going to transfer over to regular Psulei Hamukdashim. And the Gemara just simply now goes in the other direction. The Lukma, Kula ke Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. Well, why didn't the entire Braisa be explained going according to the opinion of Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon? Dilma ad kan lo kamer Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon Hasan, ela Psulei Hamukdashim de alima lemitfas pijono. So there we can make now a counter argument. You see, when it comes to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, so what do we say regarding Psulei Hamukdashim? The vestiges of Kedusha are strong. How do I see that? How do I see the strength of its vestiges? Because when I have a regular carbon that developed a blemish, I can redeem it. Mm-hmm. The fact that I can redeem it already is indication that its Kedusha was strong enough where I can transfer the Kedusha from the animal to money. Now, when I have Bechor Baal Mom, redeemable? No. The Torah says it's not redeemable. The fact that it's not redeemable is indication that even though it has vestiges of Kedusha, but those vestiges are not as strong. Because if they were strong, you'd be able to redeem it. By virtue of the fact that the Torah says you can't redeem it, means that the Kedusha to begin with is not as strong. And so therefore those vestiges there are going to be on a lighter degree. They're not going to be as strong. So Dilma ad kan lo kamer Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon Hasan el Psulei Hamukdashim dalim mitfas pijano. Ava bechor de lo alam mitfas pijano lo. Okay, so that's why the Gemara says that I needed Beit Shammai to explain the bechor baal mom, and I needed Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon to explain the Psulei Hamukdashim.
It sounds here like Rebbe Shimon holds this by all Psulei Hamukdashim, even though he says it's only machatos because the other ones are not meisos.
Enachinami. The Gemara does use that brisa and extend it to other Psulei Hamukdashim. Your point's very well taken. V'Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Leislei, Kol Psulei Hamukdashim, Nimkarim Be'ilas, V'Nishkan Belitra, Amad Dekevin De'ika, Rav Chalekte, Sharilei. So, now, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, what about our Mishnah? Our opening Mishnah here in the fifth parak of Bechoras, that says that when you have Psulei Hamukdashim, it can be sold on the open market. Sold on the open market, weight against regular weights. And why? Because Ravcha Lehekdesh, because any profit that's gained is going to go to the base of Mikdash. So, and you're telling me that according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, he doesn't subscribe to that Mishnah? So, Amar Rav Mari, Berei de Rav Kana, Mashem Mashbiach Ba'or, Pogem Bebasar. So, so it's true that if you do Margilin, you are going to gain in the hide, but you're going to gain in the hide, you're going to lose in the meat. So, Enachinami, meaning of course he holds by our Mishnah, that you're allowed to sell in the open market, but you're allowed to sell the meat on the open market. But once you do Margilin, it's true you're going to get better hide. You're going to get a more functional piece of hide. But at the same time, however, you're losing on the meat, and so therefore, it's not going to help you. Okay. The last lines of Gemara from here until the Mishnah, it's only three of them. So so these last lines of the Mishnah, they're going back on what? So Rashi writes over here, "Bamarava Amrei Le'elkai," We are going back on a previous discussion. The Gemara does not make this point super clear, but that's why we have Rashi. La'elkai klamer la'olam divrei hakol hi da'asur lahargil. Meaning, what Rashi is now suggesting is that the Gemara over here is offering a new pshat. Remember, the brisa that we've been spending the last couple of minutes discussing has been that you're not allowed to do margilin, you're not allowed to flay the animal in the cylindrical manner when it comes to psula hamukdashim. We now have had, so far, Rav Chista telling us that it's the opinion of Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon. What the Gemara now is proposing, according to Rashi, is that no, don't limit it to Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon. Divrei Hakol. It's everyone's opinion that you're not allowed to do hargala. Why? So let's go right back to the Gemara. I mean, Rashi's going to say it, but the Gemara's going to say it. So, B'marava Mishmei Doravina Amrei Mimnesha Nira Ke'oved Avoda B'kachim. Because of appearances. Meaning that it looks like we're doing avoda when it comes to kachim. Now we're not. In other words, it's psula mukdashim. But because once upon a time it was a carbon, and because of the history, so therefore people will walk away with the impression that we're doing avoda bekachim. Rabbi Yosef bar Avin Amar Gzeres Hamigadol Mehem Adar Madarim. And another consideration, another concern, and Rashi says it's the same basic idea. Meaning that the braisa that you cannot do this kind of flaying with psula mukdashim. It's not a limited cheetah. It's not just the position of Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon. It's going like everybody. And the concern is that Shemi Gadol Behem, Adar Madarim, that what's going to happen is that if I'm allowed to flay the animal in this manner, apparently this kind of flaying and taking the hide off in a cylindrical manner is so significant that it's really going to incentivize people, hey, let's do it again. And so what people are going to do is that people are going to start breeding the animals in order to be able to flay in this manner. And obviously, we're talking about psula mukdashim, and breeding is out of the question. So, as the gzeira, as a rabbinical decree, so the chachamim issued a decree that you're not allowed to flay in this manner, and it will not incentivize people to just keep the animals and breed the animals. Okay. Adkan takes us for the first half of today's daf, more than the first half, but the first sugya of today's daf question on the table that we opened up with is: Who can the kohen invite over to eat his bechor ba'amom? So there are three shitas on the matter. Beit Shammai says only other Kohanim, that's it. According to Beis Hillel, Yisraelim. According to Rabbi Kiva's version of Beis Hillel, Yisraelim and even Goyim as well. The Gemara went through the various sources in terms of how each one arrives at their position. And effectively what's behind all these Gemaras over here is how much remaining Kedusha is left in our Bechor Ba'amum, now it's a blemished animal. Are there vestiges of Kedusha? That's basically the undercurrent of the entire discussion, and with that undercurrent we discussed, can you give your Bechor Ba'amum, can you have Nidus come in and eating your Bechor Ba'amum? Machlok is Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beit Shammai says no, Beis Hillel says yes. Can you do Margilin? Can you flay the animal in such a manner? The Braisa says no, and according to Rav Chista, that Braisa is reflective of the viewpoint of Beit Shammai.
You cannot invite him to come in. He can just sell it. You're not allowed to eat with them.
Why not?
You're not allowed to drink and so on.
That's true. You're right. What you're saying is correct, but that's also very. It's very legal. Meaning you're not allowed to eat. You're not allowed to drink wine with them, and you're not allowed to have cook. You're not allowed to have them cook for you. But stop just to eat together. That eating together is fine. Meaning obviously you have to. You know you have to take into consideration the concerns of intermarriage and association. But in terms of the halacha is concerned, the halacha is very legal. It works with wine, it works with bishul akum, but just to eat together in of itself.
So you can invite him to eat with you.
Yeah. Okay. Bechor she'achzor dam. Okay. The Mishnah over here discusses the following. First, just a word on achizas dam. A very short word. Achizas dam, bloodletting, is super popular in the time of the Gemara. Time of the Gemara, even beyond the time of the Gemara, bloodletting used to be standard medical practice. Okay, and what you would do or what you would have your animal do is you would basically have, you would go to your, usually it was a barber, right?
Barber.
Yeah, right. I don't know if you're right. I don't know if you bring your animal over to the barber, but you go to the barber and you get a shave, you get a haircut, and you get a little bloodletting. And they thought it to be therapeutic. Truth of the matter is, I'll be honest with you, the Gemara is not super excited about it. The Gemara never like says it like this is fantastic. The Gemara does have like a cautionary tone to it. You're not going to hear it today in today's Gemara. But other Gemaras give like more of a cautionary tone to bloodletting. Gemara's not excited by it, but it was standard practice. And so the question on the table is just such a wonderful question. So you have now your Bechor, and you can't do anything with it, you meaning the Kohen. You can't do anything with it. You can't shecht it until it develops a blemish. Oh, and now I think it needs a little bloodletting. Oh, great. That's fantastic. And what you're now going to do is you're going to bring it to your local bloodletter, your animal bloodletter, your vet, and you're going to be like, well, this animal needs bloodletting. Well, it also happens to be a Bechor. And so through the process now of bloodletting, so aren't you going to be putting a blemish down? Not necessarily, meaning blemishes are very specific. In the next parak, we're going to be treated to what exactly is a blemish. So you could do the practice of bloodletting. You could perform bloodletting and not make a permanent wound on the animal. It's possible if you're skilled enough. But at the same time, however, there's now a good chance that you're going to make a blemish in this animal. Now, rule number one when it comes to blemishes, and we're going to see it today for the first time, is that you are not allowed to put the blemish on the animal. Not only that, we're going to go even a step further. You can't even cause a situation that will cause a blemish on the animal. Right, put a little piece of honey right on the ear of the animal and have some other animal now bite off its ear. Right, I didn't do anything. Right, hold your hands up. Right, no foul. No, that's all. A gram mum is also unacceptable. So over here now, so you understand the tension of the Mishnah. On one hand, you're not allowed to put a blemish on the animal. On the other hand, I think the animal needs bloodletting. Right, as a therapy, I think it needs bloodletting. So what do you do? Good. That's the tension in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah now discusses. B'chor she'achzo dam, afilu meis in makizin lo dam, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda's position is the most strict and the most clear. No bloodletting. The animal may die. Okay. The animal may die. But in other words, this idea that you're going to be putting a blemish in the animal is so restricted that you cannot bloodlet, period. And even though, by the way, you understand how harsh this position is, bloodletting may not absolutely result in making a blemish, right, but still. In other words, the idea that you may make a blemish is going to be cause to say no bloodletting. And even if that means the animal is going to die. V'chachamim omrim, yakiz v'vashalo yaseh b'mum. V'yamaseh b'mum, arizelo yishchat alav. The Chachamim's position a little bit more middle of the road. So the Chachamim say, yeah, do the hakaza, but make sure not to make a blemish. Right. So in other words, you're going to need a technician who really knows what they're doing, and fine. And if a blemish is in fact made, so you can't shecht the Bechor over this particular blemish, because this was a blemish that was placed on the animal and did not happen organically. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yakiz Afapishu Ose B'mom. And Rabbi Shimon says, look, intention is critical. Your intention right now is not to make a blemish on the animal. Your intention right now is to help and assist the animal that right now you think needs bloodletting, and the vet thinks so as well. So fine, so you'll bloodlet. It's going to make a blemish? Okay, it'll make a blemish. That's not my intention. Now, we all know that it is, right, according to Rabbi Shimon, is it a psik ratio? Is it not a psik ratio?
You can do it in a plate.
Right. I'm telling you, I'm going to for sure have to formulate this at one point in my life, but psik ratio and shar isurim, it's almost as if it's like not a discussion. Meaning by psik ratio, by Shabbos, the Gemara says it all the time. But like, I have to challenge myself. Like, are we ever going to see the Gemara raise the psik ratio issue by Davar She'eino Miskaven when it comes to other Isurim outside of Shabbos? Mm-hmm. I've yet to see the Gemara do so. So, okay, good. So the Gemara is not bothered by psik ratio when it comes to Shari Isurim.
Well, the Shiva hold after he made that move.
It's good.
You, he got shecht on it,
yep,
or not?
Yep. It sounds that way.
The most lenient.
If it goes to that extreme.
Yeah, yeah. The davar shedim is coming.
That's to make the move.
Yeah, and agreed. Not arguing. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the Braisa b'chor shachzul dam mekizin laos adam mimakum she'in osim bo mum ve'in mekizin laos adam b'makum she'osim bo mum. Divrei Reb Meir. So over here in the Braisa, same discussion. It's just there's going to be a couple more opinions. So first, the opinion of Reb Meir. Reb Meir says, yeah, you can do the bloodletting, but make sure to do it in an area where it's not going to make a blemish in the animal. But if you're going to be doing the hakaz in an area where it's going to make a blemish in the animal, you can't do that. Now the Chachamim say, by all means, go for it. Blood let away. And it's therapeutic to the animal. But it just happens to be that if you do make a blemish, you won't be able to shech the animal over this blemish. Rabbi Shimon Omer Af Nishchadol Oso Amum. And Rabbi Shimon says, go ahead, go for it. Again, intention for Rabbi Shimon is the most critical part. It's a davar she'eino miskaven. You have no intention of making a blemish. And if you happen to make a blemish, you made a blemish. And even if you happen to benefit from that, that's fine as well. And so you could shecht even over that particular blemish. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu meis ein makizn laos adam. And Rabbi Yehuda says that even if the animal is going to die, you still cannot bloodlet. So if you follow carefully in the Braisa, there's one more opinion in the Braisa than that we had in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we had three opinions. Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim, and Rabbi Shimon. And in the Braisa, we have four opinions, so we introduce the opinion of Rabbi Meir. And what the Gemara now is going to do, and we'll stop here and we'll pick it up tomorrow, is the Gemara is going to compare these shitas that we just learned together and a similar discussion regarding Chavishal Truma, Barrel of Truma. The connection, we'll make the connection tomorrow.